guys, today I'm going to read chapter 22 of the Shakespeare's Jailer. So here I go. I let fly with the stool. It knocked the student's rapier from his hand and struck him on the shoulder. Without waiting to see what he would do, I knelt beside Nick and pulled his hands away from the wound. It was a serious one, but the knowledge of medicine and anatomy I'd absorbed willy-nilly in Dr. Bright's service told me that no artery had been severed. The thrust had stuck next to his throat bone and been stopped his jaw. Still, there was a copious flow of blood. Using Nick's dagger, I cut off a sleeve from his linen shirt and pressed it into a ball over the wound. Nick's eyes were wide, darting about as though searching for something. He tried to rise, but I put a knee on his chest. Lie still now. We've got to stop the bleeding. When the first compress was dyed red, I had Sandra cut another and pressed it into the wound until at last the bleeding slowed enough to allow me to bind it in place. Stay there a bit yet, I told Nick. Then I rose and looked about. The two students were gone. How bad is he? Sander asked, his voice anxious and unsteady. All alive, most like. What will we do with him now? The servant's keeper sent for Constable, which is why those two fled. You can go to prison for dueling. That doesn't seem to keep anyone from it. No, some men's honor is easily insulted. Not mine, he said. There's little in this world worth fighting over, as far as you can see. Then why did you take Nick's part? Did you not once say that he was part of the family? So I did. All the same, it's a brave thing. It was a brave thing. I shrugged. And I have done as much for me. Sander looked down at Nick, who lay staring at the rotted ceiling. I doubt it. The authorities seemed to feel that Nick had suffered enough. Instead of taking him to prison, they took him to a hospital. Within a fortnight, he was on his feet again, too late to be of any use of our clan performance at Whitehall. We could have dealt with his absence alone, for Sander had been studying a part of Halmit's mother, but we were deprived of our Ophelia as well. Had the decision have been left to Julia, I feel sure that she would have taken the risk, for she had gone on playing her old roles on the stage of the Globe, despite the fact that her secret was out. Though I didn't expect anyone would deliberately give her away, someone might let the truth slip, as Sander himself had done at the Tarfin. I knew that were my own secret revealed, I would not have had the nerve to face Mr. Pope, or Mr. Hemmings, or Mr. Shakespeare, or Sander. Julia was the only one I felt might understand. Yet I wasn't sure. When I believed her to be a boy, I had begun to think of her as a friend. Now suddenly I felt as though she were a stranger. Before I had talked freely with her, more freely than I ever had with anyone, even Sander, now sounds of alarm for London. I was assisting in the turning room when she came in the room to change costume. "You don't mind if I forgo your help, do you?" she said dryly. "No, no," I said embarrassed. She disappeared into the wardrobe. It took me some time to think of how best to ask what I wanted to ask her. Finally, concluding that there was no good way, I said it straight out. "Why did you do it?" After a long pause, her voice came in from the other room. "Do what?" "You can," she emerged, still hooking her bodies together. "Disguise myself?" She shrugged. "For the same reason we all do it, to give others what they expect of us." "I don't care what you mean." "Yes, you do. You do the same yourself." "Disguise myself?" "Of course. Why do you speak so politely to Mr. Armand and Mr. Pope, and with the other sheriffs, as do they tell you without complaint?" I laughed. "Because they'd bust me in the ears if I did not?" "I doubt that. Anyway, you don't act the way with Sandra and me." "Didn't think me daft, and I did. You see, we play roles others expect of us. If I'd come here as a girl and said I wish to be a player, they'd have laughed and turned me away. Girls are not permitted on the stage. In curbs, then." She shook her head and smiled bitterly. "If I was not corrupted long since, growing up in Alastia among thieves and beggars, then I must be incorruptible." She hoisted herself up on the table next to me so cosily that I had to remind myself that this was no boy made up to resemble a girl, but an actual girl. "It was nothing new to me," she went on, "dressing and acting as boys as a boy does. My da wanted a boy and made no secret of it. To carry on the family trade, you might say. He didn't provide me with much girls' clothing. You can't outrun the law wearing skirts," she always said. She laughed and flapped the hem of her elegant costume. In truth, I wore skirts and bodice discs regularly only after I began masquerading as a boy. "Will they let you go on with it?" Her face grew solemn, and she shook her head. "They can't, now that they know. If the queen gets a wind of it, they're all in the soup." What will you do then?" What that I knew," she said, with something nearer to despair than I had ever heard of her. "I've never wanted anything to be a player, but ever since the day I crept into the theater back theaters and watched The Lady of May through the crack of the door, she starred into the space as though seeing the performance once more. A tear welled in her eye and coursed down her rubbed cheek. She raised the sleeve to dash it impatiently away and forced a smile. "Perhaps I'll take up my dad's trade after all. As I had said, it's best to be what people expect of me." "It's not fair," I said. "No," she said, "it's not." She jumped down from the table. "I'll miss my cue. Does it matter now?" She shrugged and gave an ironic smile. "It does to me. If, of course, what she said was perfectly true. The company would not let her go on performing alone. No matter how loyal or how close-mouthed the other players were, sooner or later someone was sure to let the truth slip out, and this time the company might not be let off lightly as they had been in the Essex affair. Even if we could have carried the deceit of successfully at the Globe, we dare not risk in it under the very nose of a queen. The part of Ophelia would have to go to a boy. Sandra was out of the question, being occupied with Nick's. Sam and James, hopefuls, were neither old enough nor experienced, so the company was left with a clear choice. Either they must hire a boy from some other company, someone who would be unfamiliar with the role, with the methods of Chamberlain's men, or they must settle for me. They settled for me. To the company's credit, they did not simply thrust the part upon me. Mr. Hemmings asked me if I wanted. I was not used to being asked my opinion or anything, and it confused me. Did I truly have the choice, or was this an offer, like Simon Bass's offer, that I was not permitted to refuse? I don't suppose I could think of promise. We have less than a week left until the performance. Aye, I said mournfully, I can that. Julia has offered to go over part of me with you. That would help, I admitted. But I'm not just certain. I mean, do you really think I'm ready to play so important a role before so important an audience? If we didn't feel you could do it, we would not have offered it to you. Whether or no you have the ability is not the question, but whether or not you have the courage. If this was calculated upon my pride, it worked, and that surprised me. I was sure that was small pride I was buried deep, for it seldom bothered me. I had never been much of a hand of courage either. When two paths were open to me, which is not often in life's apprentice, I took the one easiest to travel without regard to where it led. I had never deliberately chosen the perilous or demanding path. But I had done many things recently that I had never done before, and I never dreamed I would do. Well, I said with a sigh, I suppose if Julian could be a boy for 3 years, I can be a girl for an hour or two. So that was chapter 22. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya later. Bye, guys.